Should I do it again? It's just green. So we will start off with the announcements coming up to you. As most all of us are aware, we meet twice a week, Sundays and Wednesdays. Now on Sundays, for the month of June, we're sort of in the middle, shall we say. The doors open at 10:30. The meetings are from 11 to 12 noon. And we are in the month of June, and our subject matter has been practical theosophy. Next Sunday, we will be dealing with thorough altruism and self-sacrifice. Then, we wanted to mention ULT Day is coming up. It deals with Robert Crosby, who is, in a way, the founder of the United Lodge of Theosophists. So we call it ULT Day. There will be an introduction, there'll be some readings, and then there will be a short talk with United Lodge of Theosophists, its mission and future. And that's on the 25th. Then on Wednesdays, we have our study class. And this season we have been studying, and we're working towards the end, of The Key to Theosophy by H.P. Blavatsky. Those classes start at 7:30 and they end promptly at 8:30. Now the library, which is a reference library in the front of the building, is open from 5:15 to 7:15. And anyone is welcome to come in and read if there is some sort of a reference dealing with the class for that night. They can get a chance, if they don't have the books at home, to read up on it. It's like the icing on the cake for the subject matter of the night. So that takes care of that information. All of the work done, whether it's done here at this lodge or any of the lodges that are situated throughout the world and also through the rest of the United States, they're all done on a voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. All are most welcome and all are most appreciated. We will start this off with the reading of the Declaration, which is always presented at all meetings, at all lodges, at the beginning. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles. Through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teachings, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So this morning, following into this, we are looking at the idea of true prayer and meditation. We will have a talk given, short talk, and then there will be a time period for questions and answers and comments.
When we say the words prayer and meditation, certain pictures come to mind. For praying, perhaps a person kneeling with closed eyes, bowed head, and folded hands. For meditation, perhaps someone sitting cross-legged with eyes closed, spine straight, and hands turned upwards in their lap. But it is not body position that we need to concern ourselves with. It is the mentality, our thoughts, and eventually our actions. Prayer is a much misunderstood word and usually conveys the idea of some favor, some help or benefit sought from a God outside of ourselves. Even the dictionary defines it as a supplication or request to God or persons. But who is God? We all believe in God, either as a person, however high, or as a power, a principle, however divine. But outside of the human heart and of the universe, theosophy teaches God to be the Supreme Spirit, omnipresent and omniscient, the root and the source of all beings, and man is its crystal ray, a beam of immaculate light within the form of material clay. It is the highest privilege of man to commune with God because he is a self-conscious being. The human consciousness is a link between the divine and the personal, so man can choose to move in one direction or another, either to unite with the Supreme Self within or get victimized by his lower and personal self. It is the wrong type of prayer that kills self-reliance and makes one dependent on priests and ceremonies and ministers and temples and churches. The right understanding of God and prayer enables one to become self-independent on the basis of inner dependence. As there is unity of life, so human solidarity is a fact, and each one is his brother's keeper, and therefore responsible for his own thoughts, words, and deeds. True prayer, is the outpouring of the human heart in utmost humility and reverential gratitude for all the blessings of life. There is no thought of personal gain, no petition for personal favors, because God, from the theosophical point of view, is also law, universal and impersonal, which cannot be deviated from in its own course by human petitions. As Lord Buddha advises us in the Light of Asia, pray not, the darkness will not brighten. Ask naught from the silence, for it cannot speak. Vex not your mournful minds with pious pains. Ah, brothers and sisters, seek naught from the helpless gods by gifts and him, nor bribe with blood, feed with fruits and cake. Within yourself, deliverance must be sought. Each man his prison makes. True prayer, then, is a yearning of the human heart, its ardent wish to be united with its divine parent, to seek its guidance and reflect its light in the daily affairs of life. This is the true and real significance of prayer. If, however, you feel the need, the help of Master Jesus, his doctrine will be no different from that of his fellow initiates. His teachings, as that of HPB, and all of them, was in pray to your Father in heaven, your own inner self, in the spirit recesses, in the secret recesses of your own heart. That the will of the indwelling spirit may be done through your body. This means that you have to do it yourself. It does not, never has, and never will mean anything else. This is the will prayer referred to by H.P. Blavatsky in her book, The Key to Theosophy. It is the highest form of prayer. It is a command to the lower man that he align himself with the higher, who is not personal. It is not a petition, but its exact opposite. It is not an asking for help, or even that a higher and better understanding of truth be had. For that position is a personal position, and therefore a selfish one. The true will prayer requires that all ideas of personality be dropped altogether, and that the being, assuming his own true position as a spiritual being, compel the lower to open itself to the amazing, energizing rays of the spiritual sun within himself. Such prayer is selfless and universal in motive and effect. It is at once an affirmation of self, an arouser of the spiritual will, an utter and complete resignation of works, fruits of works, or desires, and abandonment of egotism. So one might ask, how is this different? Is it the same as meditation? Is prayer the same? Meditation, not being petitioning, allows us to focus our thoughts on the selfless source of all, knowing that the great law of karma will adjust all according to the absolute justice of cause and effect. William Q. Judge divides meditation into two sorts. First is the meditation practiced at a set time or an occasional one, whether by design or from physiological quirk. Second is a meditation of an entire lifetime. That single thread of intention, intentness, and desire running through the years, stretching from the cradle to the grave. The second type is the one of interest. To imbue your every waking moment with selfless contemplation of the divine. Whether doing dishes or performing your life's occupation, knowing that your every decision is formed from the standpoint of love and devotion to the ultimate principles in life, that is, working with nature and not judging her or trying to change her path. Mr. Judge ends with this thought: if we desire truth with the same intensity that we had formerly wished for success, money, or gratification, we will speedily acquire meditation and possess great concentration. If we do all our acts, small and great, every moment, for the sake of the whole human race, as representing the Supreme Self, then every cell and fiber of the body and inner man will be turned in one direction, resulting in perfect concentration. This is expressed in the New Testament in the statement that if the eye is single, the whole body will be full of light. In one chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it is beautifully put as the lighting up in us of the Supreme One, who then becomes visible. Let us meditate on that which is in us as the highest self. Concentrate upon it and will to work for it as dwelling in every human heart. In closing, HPB writes this: our prayers and supplications are vain unless to potential words we add potent acts and make the aura which surrounds each one of us so pure and divine that the God within us may act outwardly, or in other words, become as it were an extraneous potency. Thus have initiates, saints, and very holy and pure men been enabled to help others as well as themselves in the hour of need and produce what are foolishly called miracles, each by the help and with the aid of the God within himself, which he alone has enabled to act on the outward plane. Once again, the topic for today is true prayer and meditation.
Thank you. So, if we look at the idea about which to choose, we might come back with the idea, after balancing both from this talk, we can see that there's really no need for interpreters. We ourselves are the interpreters. So we open this up for questions, comments. Yes.
So the theosophical idea of prayer then is not to beg for help, for guidance, because we have to open up ourselves to our higher nature for that sort of direction, not looking outward for something else to tell us what it is we have to do. So it's something that we have to figure out for ourselves by having this open channel with our higher nature. Is that it?
That's it. And we are told it can be done. It is not an easy task for most. Some, we think of the idea of that duck in the water just running off its back. Some can take to it very easily. And it would seem obvious that they have touched on it possibly more than once in other lifetimes, that it comes easy for them. For some of us, it comes in stages. It's still difficult to keep up the routine. It's like being ourselves the study of the class. We have to see how we're going to develop it. And in the writings of HPB, she is quoted that the masters have said that 2/3 of all the woes of mankind are due to the belief in a personal God, an outside personal God. Yes.
Yet there is a form of prayer that really is good for us, and that's of gratitude. But instead of thinking of gratitude to a God who has given us this or that, it's more gratitude for the opportunities you have, for the people around you, for the books you have a connection with. So gratitude, they are today scientifically beginning to study and prove that it is a very healthy thing.
And it's not something one just dabbles in. It's something that you'd have to really study to understand that whole concept. Yes?
So then, will prayer then said in a different way? Would it be wrong to say that will prayer is an affirmation of something that you know is the right thing to do, keeping your eye on the ball and working toward that with right motive?
Yes.
Knowing that it's going to happen because you're willing it to be done.
And we have to understand that will is, as we noted, in the front of the ocean, Mr. Judge does make the comment, not much is said about will in the whole philosophy as we see it. But the idea that it's a universal power, it's not just for mankind, it's a universal power, the power of will. The whole idea of evolution is, shall we say, promoted by the will of mankind wanting to develop into a pure, more universal type of a person. If we understand it, that it is universal, then we can understand the fact that we can touch on that part of our nature. It can be something that will keep us motivated to keep moving, to know that there is this power within me. There is this definitely division of a higher spiritual nature versus a physical nature that deals with everyday life. Yes?
Well, I think it's said that will is the driving force behind all of evolution, because we are wanting to return to our source. And in the process, we elevate all of life in turn. So will is behind, it's behind its spirit in action. So that, we all have will, otherwise we wouldn't be here this morning. It took will to come here. It took behind will stands desire. But,
strong desire.
Yeah, but it's your will. It's that which you know is right, and that your lower nature says, "Nah, don't do it today. It's a little tomorrow." But it's that will that you need to stay on the path.
And if we look at ourselves in this lifetime, and we speak of the idea of our karmic ties and the backload of karma that is yet to approach and maybe not approach in this lifetime, it would seem that we must know something about that part of our nature, because we keep coming back. We keep trying to get better in the understanding of what the whole system is for, and that whole movement of evolution. We are part of it. We're part of that motor that keeps it moving. Yes.
But one of the things about will prayer is we have to be willing to review and keep watching, because the personal mind that we're usually in blinds us completely. So we could think we're being spiritual and we're really being spiritually selfish. So it's a difficult task, but it's the way we have to do it. We have to watch ourselves and review very carefully.
They have many different hints of each one finds some sort of devotional book to help them. For some, it's Patanjali's yoga aphorisms. It's not as poetic as some of the other devotional books, but it's very direct, and it gives you a step-by-step method to learn to control that battle within, to silence that personal nature, to be able to indulge in our true nature. And as was stated earlier, it's not an easy task. But for those who read and understand everything they've learned so far, they can understand it's worth the while to put the effort out. And it doesn't matter how many times you might slip and fall. The fact that we have the initiative to get up and try it again. And if you can't meditate and sit and think of higher things for a half hour or an hour, start off with 5 minutes. See if you can control this mind to be able to sit for 5 minutes and think on a higher scale. Find something universal, like universal brotherhood. We use that for an idea. And that whole idea of one-pointedness. During the course of a day, how many times have we started off to do something and all of a sudden this comes into our mind, that comes into our mind, oh, I've got to do this, or I should have done that. And this whole dialogue goes on. And what you actually sat down to do, you haven't really entered into yet. The teachings of the idea of one-pointedness is very important when it comes to trying to think within. And then the other thing that goes along with that is, beside the one-pointedness, is be able to understand what it means from the Buddha's teaching, that walk that middle path. Try to control our, quote, emotions, not too high, not too low, but to try to sort of be on a steady pace, because that will be the way that we can actually see what we're doing right or what we're doing wrong. But most of the time we're so involved with what we're doing, we just let the doings fall to the side. Yes.
So then when it comes to prayer, we got to think about something. You know, if you're praying for something to happen or not to happen, what you're basically saying is, whatever is the status quo right now, almost like, I'm not satisfied with it, so I want to do this, you know? So if that's your feeling, then you have to ask yourself, well, what is it that I'm not seeing? Because the divine is universal and it's here. Why are you not satisfied? So if the will prayer, if it's what's driving the will prayer is a lack of something, or you, then we really need to check ourselves. But what comes to mind is in the declaration, it says, you know, to fit oneself to be the better able to help and teach others.
Right.
So to fit oneself, the implication right there is, some changes need to be made. That doesn't mean you're not a divine individual. But at the same time, anybody who thinks they can't improve something about themselves is a fool. Mm-hmm. So if one's going to fit himself or herself to be the better able to help and teach others, that is going to be an act of the will, because fitting oneself requires a change. And the change is going to have to be within.
And let's think about it. The majority of all of us really live as that personal personality that we look in the mirror and we see every day. That idea of a spiritual being to some people is, again, wherever their background is from, is a very highly thing, a spiritual being. But yet, it's something that can be rationally used by any individual at any time that he chooses or she chooses to try to live and think and see everything through our spiritual nature, not this personality nature, not all this outside that has colored us so many times from childhood up to whatever age we are. We are just bombarded from the outside that we really, for some, have never thought of the idea, well, unless I sit down and try to meditate, I'll never know what it is to be a spiritual being that we truly are. Yes.
When we first saw the title for today's class, we thought, true prayer meditation, how do these things go together? We thought that it was two different things. But after the talk and the discussion we've had, it seems as though progressing on one's meditation can actually help the will prayer that was mentioned. So the two of them kind of go together. Can't we say that? We're not sure.
Well, could we maybe think of it as through the trials and tribulations till we get to the point where we can, quote, seriously meditate on some idea and keep it on there for more than 5 minutes, we could honestly say we could probably tap some of that force from that power of will. Once we've learned to meditate and have some control, it's like we're the driver and we're the horse. We need to get control of that horse. And it is this driver that doesn't know that he is, quote, the driver. And he acknowledges himself with connection with the horse. So we're always running out. Most people, when you say prayer, right away, it's more of a, quote, an institutional religious idea. And most of those times, it's a prayer asking for help from the outside. If not for myself, then for someone else. But the fact is, we're asking where we could be telling if we only knew and could act on that spiritual part of our nature. There must be some times where a mother and child have had that connection, have had that feeling to express that true spiritual giving of the heart. Yes.
Okay, so In the book of...
Okay.
I didn't know.
All right, she didn't know. You.
In the book of Matthew, Christians read about the instructions of Christ on the Sermon on the Mount, on how to pray. And that's where you find the phrase, pray within the closet of your heart. And also the words of the Lord's Prayer, our Father who art in heaven. Now, how would a theosophist look at those concepts, pray within the closet of my heart and our Father who art in heaven? How does that line up theosophically?
What is that line where Buddha says, look within, thou art Buddha. You are a spiritual being, but it's not to be looked at for outside. We have to look inside. And with that idea of meditation comes that idea of concentration, comes just in controlling ourselves. We need to know what it means to concentrate. If we're doing something for ourselves or something, we can concentrate really strong. We don't even realize the time has flown by. But when it's concentrating on something that it's hard to understand for some at the beginning, that needs to take place. We have to learn to concentrate first. Now, your point.
Yeah, I understand the concept of prayer. I see prayer as being a petition, so petitioning yourself, your greater self, your I am. I understand that praying for yourself. I really do. That's really hit home. But you got a sick friend, and you almost have to pray to an outside source for that, because you can't be trying to bring something out of yourself to help your sick friend. I guess that's where I don't see where the prayer will come in, when you're praying for somebody outside of yourself. Praying for to improve yourself, I understand that part, but it's praying for somebody else. You almost have to go higher to pray for them outside. You know, because inside, how are you going to help?
But, you know, there is a way of controlling ourselves through working inside. And for most of us, we need to have more control, because we're too spread out. We don't know from one pointedness. We're scattered away. And again, if you have some feelings for this sick friend, the way you feel for this friend and the way you could wish for things for this friend, you can do mentally within yourself. You don't need to go and give, quote, a prayer through someone else to help someone else. You could do it within by your inner thoughts. Your thoughts are things. They're not just fly. They have life to them. You can mentally send out good thoughts, and you can be that much of a help for another. So there's points that you need to study about, and we do have references for that idea of thoughts are things. And it's like when you get a group of people that are sitting at a prayer meeting, for instance, and all those people are tuned in for one simple thing. There is, shall we say, workings in that. Things can be turned in that instance, but it can also be done for an individual, for another individual way of thinking. Yes.
So then what we're describing here, it would seem what we're describing here is, rather than praying to someone else to help this other, all we're actually doing is actively acting on compassion, making compassion happen. You know, if compassion is the power of the soul, then is that not saying, you know, the connection between us, if the, you know, given that there's the relationship, is that where we're going with it? It's like, it's compassion that gives us the power to help someone else in that situation.
And it's, as we said, by thinking good thoughts for that individual, if enough people were doing that, in any situation. Something can be affected by it. Yes.
Yes, but we have to remember there is no one to pray to make these changes. And it wouldn't matter if the whole world was thinking happy or good thoughts for that individual if it is not in their karma. Law rules,
true,
not what we want. So as was just said, we can act for and with that individual. We don't have to pray for them. We can do research on their condition or hopes of possibilities. We can do positive things, but compassion is law as well.
Yes.
So I think we get very confused when we read about a group of people praying over an individual and then they are suddenly saved. And it isn't that prayer so much as it is the karma of that individual. The power of thought is strong, but it cannot reverse anyone's karma but our own, and that will be over time.
And that's a very good point, yes.
There are many examples among the people which would point out a way for us to get to understand this concept. Many who live in the country or even in the city, they go into the park. It's quiet, and the birds are singing perhaps, and the sun is shining, and they sit down and they be quiet. They lose themselves in concentrating on whatever it is they're seeking, and they don't hear or see anybody passing. I'll give an example. Thomas Edison, and also Wright, the great aviation expert, said he went in and whenever he had a problem, he would lie down on top of the table, quiet. And remember now, the silence cannot speak. Yet when he got up off the table, the eye, whatever came to his mind, he put into practice. And gradually, today we have the airplane, but step by step. And if we use that idea, then we can apply that to ourselves. And even if you're in a crowd, we learn how to shut out the surrounding and go into a consultation. With whom?
With yourself.
And it's amazing. Practice makes perfect.
And as stated earlier, for most of us, we have been taught to look outside for those type of things. It is until you actually start looking at these Eastern teachings. The Gita, for instance, that can help us explain who we really are, because the Krishna and the Arjuna, the two that are really the one, are expressed in the whole epic of the Gita, the battlefield, the battleground, and the constant being reminded of many times during the whole of the 18 chapters of the Gita, which I think we will be studying in the summer again, hopefully, that one part of our nature keeps saying, well, could you tell me again, what are the steps again? Because it's not familiar to the way of thinking, because we're so directed by outside things that have colored life for us. And Arjuna keeps asking, but there gets a point where Arjuna does know. And before the end of the very end of the book, those two can become the one and be expressed in its true sense. So there are a lot of help. There is a lot of help in some of these ancient books. we did mention the Yoga Aphorisms, we did mention the Bhagavad Gita, and there's also another devotional book. It's called Light on the Path. And it's a whole different way of life, of living. When you start reading these books and you understand, even when we're ready to go to bed at night, one, there's the bed and there's the bedroom. And what are you supposed to do? Go from one type of consciousness to another. You're supposed to sleep, give rest to the body. And yet, there are people that they just cannot quiet their minds at all with all the interruptions, with a TV blaring, with reading a book, for instance, but a book that just maybe keeps going and going and you're just following it along. All sorts of telephones that are within reach, a clock that has light behind it. There's a lot of interruptions that are there that make it difficult for so many people to get to sleep. So it's like you have to make the setting and the rest period. And as it's stated, theosophy is the only philosophy that can be used in every direction in our daily life. All of these ideas can be done. It gives us a basis for a way of thinking, and justly so, a basis for our acting. So that thinking and acting. It also, it tells us, it gives us an understanding of nature, ourselves, and other beings. With theosophy, we don't just talk the talk. We need to walk it. We need to try to live it. And as a man thinks, so he becomes. And the best way to understand theosophy, it tells us, is to cultivate any of the teachings in its small affairs of life. Bring the teachings into situations that we're going through. See if there's a help there that can maybe have us a steadier way of living life. And it's an important thing to understand. It's our attitude of mind that can make the difference. Do you want to be a help to others? Do you want to share some knowledge that you might have gained with another? These are questions that, if you're going to do good, let's do it all the way. But we've got to start somewhere. And when we start, we got to take our time and know that we might slip and fall many times. But if we've got the guts to get up and keep trying, that's a good sign. Yes.
Well, we think you left out a very important devotional book, The Voice of the Silence. But there's also poetry. Mm. There's some wonderful poetry out there. And there's good music. We think science is beginning to say, step away from any sort of electronic thing at least a half an hour before you go to bed, because it does affect your brain and the way it works. So if you could take that half hour, read a devotional book, listen to some beautiful music, you put yourself in a better position for reuniting in the deep sleep state with your own self, with your spiritual nature.
And, you know, it's that part, if one tries it a couple days, a week, and after a while it becomes a routine and it sort of takes its life of its own, that's the same idea with meditation, that a certain time will come, you're mentally in that mood, you're in that area, and it just makes it easier to happen. Try to do it always in the same place, if at all possible. If not, you could find different ways of engaging in it. There's many things that this Eastern philosophy, which is interesting because when you think about it, it's been here long before we ever thought of it. These teachings have never changed. Anywhere you go within the world, there are basic ideas that people understand. There's symbols, universal symbols. The sun is very important all over this world, and it all has its depth to it. There must be a reason why certain things don't change. And we look at that basis of maybe that's something I should look into, something that doesn't change. It's always there. It's available for my use. And there's parts of our nature, sometimes we have touched upon that within us. And it, once you've done it once or twice, it's something you, they say, you will never forget. That feeling, that knowing, I am a spiritual being. It would seem it gives everybody else that maybe hasn't been able to touch it in a way that they can remember it to try to touch it. If this is so true and we're the only ones that can do it for ourselves, you know, there are books to be read, ideas, there are ways of doing things. There's a lot of self-help information out there, but we have to do it for ourselves. We are the creators, we are the actors, and we are the developers. We're all these things in one, and if we keep telling ourselves that long enough, we should be able to get to a point where we could understand it. Yes?
We recall certain individuals who wanted to play the piano. They heard the artist's work. I want to do that. What kind of part does the desire to play the piano have in that sort of praying to become a master musician? How can he accomplish that? By prayer alone?
Action. We have to be the doer. If you want to, you're going to have to sit down, introduce yourself to that keyboard, and learn how to play, and learn how to go from scales to songs to symphonies. And then, of course, think of the conductors of great symphonies. If you split up all those different instruments by themselves and you hear them tuning up, it's like, it's really irritating. But yet, when the time comes and they all have to come together and follow the notes, out of it comes harmonious harmony. Yes.
I still wanted, I had the desire first.
First, yeah, it's as it states, we hear that assertion, desire first arose in it. So this whole idea, you have to have the desire, and that is a national thing, it's a normal thing. We don't mean national, it's universal thing. Because it is desire that keeps on this whole method of evolution and why we're here and why we keep coming back to learn the harmony, to learn the balance, to be able to express it, to be part of it and know it without having to have any outside interference. And it would seem one could stand taller within themselves, not as an image, but to know that this division and this split has been of my own making. And if that's the case and I want to change it, I can make it different. And I can take and use that power of will to help me make it different and to help me be what I really want to be. So this whole idea of true prayer and meditation, concentration and the use of the will, it's all part of the package that we have to open and start to develop on our own. Yes.
One of the problems we all face is we, right now, might have a desire to be something or do something, and we invest a lot of energy into it, but our karma is such that it ain't going to happen. We have carried that desire to a point where it's now a seed. So in some life, when we don't even want it or care about it, there it's going to be, and it's going to be a frustration for us because it maybe gets in the way of what we are doing. What we have to do is, instead of praying for anything, is watch our own thinking, watch our desires. What am I after and why? Become a detective about ourselves, because all we have is I to work with.
And this idea of planting seeds is very important, because if you plant it and nurture it enough, somehow, somewhere, sometime, some lifetime, that seed will become a plant, will become a flower, will become a tree. It'll come out and express itself. And nature is the easiest thing to look at, to understand, because of all the stuff that we do to this planet on a daily basis all over the world, plus those who are trying to undo that unnatural balance and are trying to get back a balance and not overdo what we have done, that, again, is a seed builder. So eventually, we will get to that higher extent one way or another. But as again, karma does play an important part. So we should think about that when we want to think about this idea of taking up meditation. Karmically, I would like it so it's an automatic thing. Well, you've got to work to make it automatic. So hopefully you've all enjoyed the talk today. It was very interesting. And it'll give us something to think about. So we'll see you on Wednesday, hopefully.